This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
Good morning. I'm Ann Holliday along with Bob Harris. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Ann.
And as you heard, if you have a question for Bob, you can give us a call at 368-9372. That's 368-WESB. You can also email garden at WESB.com, and it would be great, not necessary, but great if you sent a picture too. Or you can go to facebook.com/WESB1075, and there's a post right on the top. If you leave your question there, we'll get it to Bob. So Bob has lots of stuff he wants to talk about today.
Yeah, and I'm having trouble. Where do I begin? So I guess I got to go back because it really got to me. Some people message back about planting a tree or a shrub for loved ones. And it made me happy to see there's quite a few people that are doing that. And it's a neat thing to do. I've planted a tree for everyone in my family, including I didn't leave out Corky the Wonder Dog, too. So, I think it's a great idea. And you're just helping out everything by planting a tree or shrub. But I wanted to start out by talking about watering through these hot, dry times. A lot of people can be fooled, especially in those container plants and your vegetable garden, where even a plant can wilt even though it's wet, because through this real sunny, hot, dry time, the water's evaporating quicker than the plant can draw it up. I'll give you a for instance. I'm not sure if the figures are exact, but they're real close. Like a maple tree, it takes about a second for water to raise 6 inches. So can you imagine an 80-foot tall maple tree? It takes quite a while for that water to get all the way up. So your plants can wilt quicker than they can draw the water up. And a big mistake would be to water that plant that's already wet. I know it's tough to look at a wilted plant and not water it, because I go through that all the time myself, especially in a vegetable garden. And what we can do by watering a plant that's already wet but wilted is we'll start to cut off its oxygen supply. So it even makes it more difficult for that plant to absorb water and get it to the or, especially this time of year, we can start to create some fungus and molds that will affect the plant the rest of the season. So just be aware, you know, test that soil. If the ground is wet, try your darndest to walk away and not water it. You may be doing it some real good. You got to let that soil dry out between waterings. It's good for the health of the soil, which the health of the soil dictates the health of the plant. So that's my little rant on that. Another thing, I know a lot of people are growing zucchinis or any kind of the squash and cucumbers, and they're probably like me, checking them every day to see what's happening. They produce a separate male and a separate female flower on the plant. So not every flower is going to produce a fruit. Only the female flower will. And you can really look at the flowers. You'll see on the male flower, the flower just goes right to a stem, and there's nothing there but a long stem. The female flower will have the flower, and then right at the base of the flower will be a little swollen area, and that can become the fruit. The plant usually produces many more male flowers than female flowers. Female flowers take a lot of energy and a lot of strength for the plant to make. So there's a lot more male flowers than female flowers. So don't get discouraged if you don't see that squash or zucchini yet. It's probably going to come as soon as you produce that female flower and if it gets pollinated. Now, I'm really concerned about this because I'm having a rough time finding a bee.
Oh, even. Me too. Yeah.
So I told all of you early in the spring, plant some flowers in your vegetable garden to help attract the pollinators, not just bees. A lot of bugs will help pollinate the flowers. But if you really feel, like I do, that there's no pollinators in my yard anymore for some reason. And I don't use any chemicals in my yard, so I haven't killed them all off. It just happens to be that way this year. You can pollinate it yourself by picking a male flower off, stripping the petals down so you expose the pollen parts of the male flower, and then you can swipe it across the female parts in the female flower. So you will be the bee, and you will pollinate, and you'll be assured of producing a vegetable at that time. But also with squash and cucumbers, once in a while, you'll see that female flower will start to produce a fruit, and then after it gets a few inches long, it turns black at the end and rots off. That's because the flower didn't get fully pollinated. That's the only reason why. So sometimes it's a good idea that you do it and really try to get a lot of that male pollen off on that female blossom by you doing it yourself, becoming the bee, to ensure that you're going to get some good fruit from them plants. Not all the plants do that. You know, you don't have to worry about it with your pepper plant or your tomato plant. And of course, you're not going to worry about it with lettuce and all those crops that really don't produce a flower. You don't have to worry about it. But those squash, you may want to think about doing some pollinating yourself.
Okay. I like that. Be the bee.
Yeah, be the bee. And be careful again with the watering. But also, while you're in the vegetable garden doing your own pollinating, be on the lookout, because now is the time that some of the bad bug population may have increased if the good population hasn't taken care of them already. So one of the ones that I always look for, because I grow a lot of squash, is the squash vine borer. And it's a really pretty, almost moth-looking creature that's real colorful. It's orange, a lot of orange on it, with white stripes and black dots. So it's a pretty-looking insect. But it's looking for an area on your squash to lay its eggs. And then when those eggs hatch, it's going to produce these little, what we call baby insects or nymphs. They're going to bore into this vine of the squash. Now, it may only be one vine of your squash. Your squash should have developed several different vines by now. And of course, it'll destroy that one vine, because they'll feed inside of that vine until they become adults, and then they chew their way back out and take off and start the whole process over again. So be on the lookout for that. Another way is, if you really want to, you can start inspecting the vines or underneath the leaf, looking for those little tiny eggs, but they're so tiny, you'll have a real rough time finding them. They're going to be little tiny white eggs, maybe a 16th of an inch long, and you can wipe them off. But be on the lookout for that male, you know, if you see it, or the female, if you see that pretty adult squash vine borer, then try to destroy it before it gets to your vine.
Good morning. Do you have a question for Bob?
Yes, I do. I have a garden for the first time, and I planted zucchini, tomatoes, and cucumbers. My first question is, what would be the best weekly fertilizer for the plants?
Okay.
I have Miracle-Gro for, like, house plants, but I wondered if that's okay for a garden. And second question is, will those three keep growing vegetables after I pluck them?
Oh, okay. So the fertilizer first. The houseplant fertilizer is a very, very weak fertilizer. So I would invest in a vegetable garden fertilizer. And a good one is a 10-10-10 or a 20-20-20. It's a really well-balanced fertilizer, good for any gardener, but especially good for new gardeners, and congratulations becoming a new gardener. So that's a real mistake-free one. So that's what I would suggest, because the houseplant one is just too weak. It's not going to be enough for those vegetable plants.
Okay.
And then the second part of your question was, as it's producing fruit, you can harvest fruit, and it will continue right up till frost. continue to make fruit on all those vegetables that you mentioned.
Oh, wow. Okay. I planted them in May at some point. I think it might have been very beginning of May.
Uh-huh.
And I don't have a lot of zucchini yet, but I have a bunch of green tomatoes, and I haven't quite seen a cucumber yet.
Okay.
But the plants have gotten a lot bigger.
Good, good. You're doing well then. Here's the key, though, too. When you do start to pick some of the fruit from those plants, like your squash and the cucumbers, you grab a hold of that fruit and you give it a twist and keep twisting it till it breaks loose from the vine. That way you preserve the rest of the vine so it can still produce fruit on that part of the plant.
Oh, okay.
And same with a tomato. You don't want to just pull at it, because you can pull off a whole cluster of fruit or a whole cluster of flowers that want to become fruit. So again, it's a good idea to either snip it off or give it the twist, and it should release freely if it's ripe from there, and you'll preserve the rest of the plant that way.
Okay. Wow, well, that sounds good. All right. Well, thank you so much for the advice.
Well, good. And good luck, and keep us posted.
Okay, I will. I love listening to your show.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks all for right. calling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That just made my day, Bob.
Yeah, yeah, a new gardener. That's good to see. And she's going to get a lot of enjoyment. Going to see some failures. You know, we all do. But don't let them get you down. I'm sure there'll be more successes than failure. So I was talking about the watering, how to be very careful at this time, and watch out for some of them bugs. And now I want to talk about why perennials are so important.
Let's tease that.
Okay.
We're going to hear from our friends from Worth W. Smith, and we will be right back, and Bob will tell you why perennials are so important.
Get going on your outdoor projects now with a visit to Worth W. Smith Company Hardware. You'll find a big supply of culvert pipe, 6-inch to 36-inch diameters and 20-foot lengths, perfect for drains, driveways, and other drainage uses. Worth Smith in Bradford also has plenty of railroad ties and patio blocks, as well as plastic and steel barrels for dozens of uses. And if your outdoor activities include camping or cooking out, you'll find what you need, from charcoal to mountain pie makers. If you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Hardware in Bradford.
Welcome back to The Gardening Show with Master Gardener Bob Harris. And as always, if you have a question for Bob, give us a call at 368-9372, or you can send an email to garden@wesb.com, or you can go to facebook.com/WESB1075, and you can ask your question there. And we are going to go to the email right now. And Jenny wants to know, what can she do to help her iris get blooms? There are leaves, but no flowers.
Okay. Most of the time, irises quit blooming when they get overcrowded. So that's going to be my first answer. And to get them to bloom, you usually dig them. Now, usually the best time, and I say the best time, but any time is okay. But the best time is August. You're going to want to cut the leaves back to about 6 inches above the ground, and then dig the whole plant up and try to divide. Irises make a tuber that looks like a sweet potato.
Oh.
So you want to divide those tubers up so they're not all linked together. While they're linked together, of course, they're all fighting for that same bowl of cereal. And, of course, it's not enough for all of them. So they don't have enough energy to bloom. So you want to divide them and replant them and keep that tuber, you know, one-third to one-half above the ground, just as you're seeing it. It should be sticking out of the ground. And then you're going to replant it. Now, it's not going to be able to stand up by itself because it's only half in and half out of the ground. So what I always like to do is put a little tiny stick behind that iris with a rubber band around the leaves and around the stick. That'll help keep it upright until those roots can get out into the soil and secure the plant itself, and then you can remove the stick there.
Okay.
So that's probably the number one way. Number two is it might be lacking in some fertilizer. So I would really consider heavily a good fertilizer program. And I would probably start with a dry fertilizer, a 10-10-10. You sprinkle it on the soil, and every rain or every dew, a little bit of that dissolves, goes down in the soil, makes it available to the plant, gives it more strength so it does have the ability to build a flower. But my guess is going to be they probably need divided. If they haven't been divided in 10 years, they probably need divided now.
Okay. All right. I hope that helped, Jenny, and let us know how it turned out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Geez, I wanted to say something else about, with also the zucchini. At my house, we like to harvest our zucchini when it's about 6 or 8 inches long because we either put them in salads or I grill them on the grill. Mm. And at that size, they're very tender and make a real good tasty treat that way. You can let a zucchini grow longer. And they'll grow huge. They'll grow as big as your leg if you let them. and they're great for making zucchini bread or for stuffing and baking zucchini, but not so great for like in your salad because they tend to get a little tougher and they tend to get an area in the center that's full of seed that is okay to eat, but most of us don't like to eat it, so you have to either spoon it out or peel it out somehow. So think about that, too, when you're harvesting your zucchini. Do you want them nice little short ones, or do you want to let it set a while? And it doesn't take long. You see that 6 or 8 inch one and say, well, I'll pick that next week. Well, it's probably going to be 2 foot long next week. They grow very, very fast. So be aware of that. And the more you harvest it, the more it's going to send a message to the plant that I lost my seed, so I've got to produce another one. So the more you harvest it, the more it produces.
Okay.
So that's another hint for that beginner gardener there.
Okay.
So I started to talk about why perennials are important.
Mm-hmm.
And I did mention earlier, you know, that I'm having a rough time seeing a bee. Perennials are going to be important there because they're going to help support that bee population and help our vegetable gardens produce more because without the pollinators, we're not going to have a whole lot of vegetables. And a couple hints with growing perennials. Say you want to start a perennial bed, but you hate the weeding part of gardening. And I do too. Sometimes I enjoy it. So on a perennial tag, they're going to tell you how tall the perennial is going to get and the spacing, how far apart you should plant them. So if you really want a weed-free garden, disregard some of that spacing because the more soil you cover with plant material, the less weeds you'll have.
Ah.
And if you don't have the patience to wait a few years for that perennial to reach maturity, then start out by, I hate to say the word, but overcrowding. say on that tag, it's saying the space your perennial 12 to 18 inches apart. Well, knowing that we have kind of a shorter season here and most plants don't reach their full maturity, I'll even give you an example with a tree because I always go back to trees. A lot of places in the nation, a maple tree may reach 100 plus feet. Here in Bradford, they just never get that tall, very seldom. There are a few. Most of them will be a lot shorter than that. Same with our perennials. They're never going to reach the full maturity that it says on the tag. So if it says 12 to 18, expect only 12 and maybe plant it only 8 inches away from the next one so that they'll grow right together And, of course, that shades all the soil underneath, and that's going to mean a lot less weeds underneath, too. Of course, mulching always helps, too. Mulching is one of the best things you can do. So think about that in your perennial garden. And also think about the pollinators and just the beauty of a perennial garden, that it may be a good time to start one. And when I say perennial, to a lot of beginners, that's a plant that comes back year after year. An annual is a plant that only grows, like your tomato plant is an annual. It only grows for 1 year, and that's it. So the perennials can be a good investment, too, because they're going to come back year after year. And most of the time, most of them are going to increase in size year after year. And now, if they do start to get crowded, that's no big deal. You can divide the plants. We call it divide, where you can cut a plant in two once it gets mature. And now you have two plants, so you can replant the new one and give your neighbor the other one, or start another perennial bed with the other one. So perennials are great. They're almost a must to all of us now, because it really bugged me yesterday walking in a lot of lawns and fields where I didn't see one single bee anywhere. And we walked for hours and never saw a bee. It really bothers me.
That's sad.
Yes, it is. So we all got help out there.
What are some of the best perennials to, if you want bees?
Bees? Well, I'll even just say the best perennials around here. Of course, black-eyed Susans, they just do real well here. All the coneflowers do real well around here. Daylilies, which I wanted to talk about a little, they do great. Hostas do great. Now, a lot of people say, oh, I don't want hostas. They get too big, and you have to dig and divide them all the time, and the flower stems get real tall. There are over 6,000 different types of hostas. Some of them, I have one in my garden that's never going to get bigger than 6 inches across and only about 2 inches tall, and the flowers are only 4 inches tall. So there are hostas for every situation and everyone's taste, and they come in a lot of different colors, and believe me, they attract a lot of pollinators, and the hummingbird just loves the death out of them. So those are a few. Coral bells, that's a great one.
Yeah.
They have very colorful foliage, and they put forth a lot of blooms that support smaller pollinators. Gosh, the list can go on and on and on. Achillea and yarrow, and I could go on and on. Just about most of the places around here that you buy a perennial, buy the perennials that do well here. So don't be afraid to try anything. That bee balm, I forgot bee balm. That's a big one nowadays. Supports a lot of the pollinators. And it's just a beautiful plant. So don't be afraid to try any of them. They all do well around here. If you fail, try again. You know, maybe amend the soil a little bit more. Maybe a little less watering. I talk about watering all the time. Because it's one of the biggest mistakes gardeners make is overwatering. So keep that in mind there. Most of the fruiting plants and flowering plants need to be under a little bit of stress in order to put on their show or produce a lot of fruit. And one of the best ways to stress them is not overfeeding them. And that means not too much water.
Okay. All right. I have to remember that, remind myself of that. Almost every day. No, Ann, don't water today.
Same here.
Because, I mean, you want to take care of your plants, but sometimes you have to just let them go.
Yep, I saw that. My tomato plant, one of them wilting yesterday, but I stuck my finger in the soil. I can just even look at the soil. If the soil looks like black coffee, it's wet. If it looks like coffee with cream in it, a lot of cream, then it might be dry. But it doesn't hurt to stick your finger down in, and if it's cool and damp, then don't water it. If it's hot and dry, then it's time to water. My tomato plant, though, was wilting. It's loaded with tomatoes. I was really concerned about it, but I had to walk away.
If I do the coffee thing every single day. No, nope, it's still too dark. So I do learn things from this show all the time. But we still have a couple of minutes left. If you have a question for Bob, you can give us a call at 368-9372, 368-WESB, or you can send an email to garden@WESB.com if you have a question. And you could send a picture, too, if you want, because that helps Bob when he's trying to answer your question. But I know, was there anything else that you wanted to mention?
I wanted to mention, I did talk about daylilies. I mentioned them. So I wanted to talk about them a little bit more. You'll see a lot of daylilies blooming around Bradford now. And they're probably the re-bloomers, they call them. Mm-hmm. They will produce another set of blooms come fall. And one way to tell if you've got them or not, or when you go to buy them, if it's a daylily that's going to get less than knee high, it's probably a rebloomer. Now, if it's a daylily that gets above your waist, it's probably only good for one blossom. So be careful when you choose. And both of them are great. Those ones that get above your waist produce a huge flower and can be in many, many colors. The reblooming ones come in just a few colors so far, but they are nice because they put forth a lot of blossoms. And if you, when all those blossoms are done, if you, what we call deadhead or cut off that stem, that will help force the plant into producing another bloom. Now, if you leave those stems, of course, the plant is trying to produce seeds then where those blooms were, and it doesn't have enough energy then to reproduce blooms again. So it's a good idea to, after those flowers, what we call spent or done, to cut those back, follow the stem down as far as you can, cut it off, and that'll help that plant rebloom again for you come later in the year.
Okay. All right.
Well worth it.
Okay. And so if you have a question during the week, you can always send me an email. You can call and I'll pass the question on to Bob. You can leave us a message on Facebook any way you want. Or you can actually, like Jim did, send. He didn't really have a question. He just had something he wanted to share. You can send it through snail mail any way you want. It's easiest for you to get a hold of Bob. And he loves that kind of stuff.
Thanks, Jim. I'm excited to read this over. It looks pretty interesting.
Okay. So have a great 4th of July, everybody, and we will be here next week.